Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Andy. I needed to let you know that we are coming down to the wire on RebateJet.com. What's RebateJet? It's a platform I created for you guys, the small to medium-sized sellers trying to compete against those big brands with those big budgets. Go now to RebateJet.com, sign up for that free seller account before it goes away this month. Now, why do you want to be a part of RebateJet? Just a few things. You can list promo codes for free. You can offer 3 rebates free per day. You can list your products and sell them directly to our customers on our website. We even have a free liquidation marketplace for you to unload products that didn't work out. We also have something else crazy in the works. You guys are going to love it. Go now, RebateJet.com. Now onto the show.
Welcome to the Seller Roundtable e-commerce coaching and business strategies with Andy Arnott and Amy Wiese.
All right, everybody, welcome. This is a Seller Roundtable number 3 with our all-star host, guest host, and guest, Barkus Patty from Sixly. And welcome, Barkus.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. All right, Lee, we are going to be talking about Amazon product launching today. First things first, I'm going to pop up a quick poll, which is always fun, right? Everyone loves polls. All right, here we go. We're asking, how many launches have you done? And this will be a good one so that we can kind of gauge the audience here on skill level for launching. All right, looks like most people have done at least one, which is cool. All right, we got more than 20. I'm guessing that's Amy and Barkus. probably in that category. 10 to 20. Yeah, it's a decent spread here. Okay, cool. So, let's see. Marcus, did you want me to share my screen, or do you want to just see our beautiful faces as we do this?
You can do whatever you want, man. This is your show.
All right. Let's do a screen share then, and we can first things first, usually what we do is we do, if you haven't been on this on our Seller Roundtable, before we do kind of a little training session where we kind of just kind of teach you guys as step by step as possible how to do these things. And actually, let me make sure I'm going to mute everybody here real quick. If you guys want to ask a question, we'd love if you do it over voice and video. If you're too shy to do that, then just go ahead and pop it in the chat. And you can put it into the chat as we're talking if you want, so you don't forget. And then, so we're going to give you some instruction, and then after that, we're going to do a Q&A. And then after that, I'm going to just, kind of ask Barkus a little bit about, we'll start with Barkus about a little bit about his background, what he's doing, what he's up to, where he is, good stuff like that. So, all right, Barkus, tell everybody about yourself. Besides having an epic beard, start with an epic beard.
I got that on Amazon too.
There you go.
I work for Sixly. My official title is Chief Success Officer, which really just allows them to give me a bunch of stuff to do. But I guess the focus is really trying to make sure that not only the customers have a great experience, but then also the employees and support and sales have all the tools necessary to deliver that experience. So anyway, I've been here for almost 4 years. It may be 4 years or so. Before that, I did all kinds of stuff. Retail sales, wholesale sales. I was an insurance adjuster for about 5 years. So wide range of stuff. This is an interesting industry because it moves very, very quickly. And I feel very fortunate to be in a space where I have access to a lot of people in the industry, and also access, like working for Sixly, have access to a lot of data where we can see trends maybe a little bit quicker than somebody would have one or two products. So that definitely helps with my brand. I have my own brand. Obviously, I make something in the background here.
Right.
I have my own line of, I do things a little bit differently than most sellers. I manufacture my own line of beard oils. They're in the handmade category, and I actually do quite a bit locally and through my own site. And then I've got them on Amazon, obviously, as well. So I'm always learning just as much as everybody else is. My wife is, she's a trademark attorney and kind of in the same space. So that really, really, we get to talk about a lot of different things. And we were talking today about hijackers and how they take over brand registries now. They're like, they actually hijack trademarks and patents. So, which is a very, like a completely different off topic conversation, but it was just one of those things where, you know, I get to connect with my wife in a way like that. So very fortunate to be here. I'm always learning like everybody else. And so that's kind of where I am, what I'm doing.
Yeah. Amy and I were talking, I think the last time or the time before, but yeah, our whole thing is like, you know, if you get to the point where you think you know everything, that's when you're going to shoot yourself in the foot. I mean, you can be the smartest guy in the room and there's going to be somebody there who's going to contribute, you know, something that, you don't know about. So that's why we really love this format. Cause it's more of like we're all kind of chatting together rather than us chatting at everybody, which is really cool. Cause we get like a lot of good, exchange of information here. So, all right, Vargas. Oh, speaking of which, when we're done here, I know we're doing the PPC thing, but I forgot your wife's a trademark lawyer and I have a really good idea in that realm after this. So
okay.
Remind me. Remind me.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, of course, I'm the guy with a million ideas, right? So that's why I said when I did sell RCO, I was like, all right, I'm going to write all my good ideas down, but I'm going to just put full force into one thing because otherwise I'd have 100. So
yeah.
All right, cool. So let's get down to the nitty gritty way people are here, which is Amazon launching. And, you know, as Marcus marked in his poll, he's done probably, you know, seen or done or been involved in probably hundreds, if not thousands of launches over at Six Leaf, which is really cool. So we're going to get a lot of good knowledge out of that. So first of all, just kind of basics, like what is a product launch? And a product launch is... the gist of it is just to, you know, do certain tasks when you first launch a product to make sure that you get visibility and rank on Amazon. That's kind of the quick spiel and kind of the, you know, what a launch is if people don't know that. So let's go ahead. I went back to not sharing my screen. So let's go ahead and share my screen here real quick and we'll get going. All right. So, we've got kind of steps here. I got, 14 steps. But I'm sure there's more, but this is just kind of to guide us along. I don't like to do super long-winded, notes when I do these things, cause otherwise, I get lost in them. So I like to just kind of have an overview. So first thing we're going to want to do is, make sure that your, Amazon listing is fully optimized. Now, what that means is, you know, things like, images, title, description, bullet points, those are the basics. If your product only has like two or three bullet points, you've got a big issue and it's crazy, but I swear to God, I get so many people coming to me saying, I'm not selling, I'm not ranking, what's going on? And I pull their listing up and they've got two or three bullet points. And I'm just like, holy crap. So that's an essential. What I tell people is, you have to look at your listing and optimizing your listing as like deposits in a bank. You know, it's like the one thing that it's like the foundation of your Amazon business. The more that you put into that, the more it's going to return in the long run. You know, it's like that free organic reach. It's like, you know, planting your garden. I'd say like for social media, whenever you're doing a post, you're putting a new seed in your social media garden. Same thing for Amazon. Like every time you're doing something to optimize your listing, you're going to grow that listing organically. So that's kind of the first step with that listing optimization. Marcus, anything I'm missing or anything you want to add to that?
No, you know, it's something that I actually talk about a lot too with clients, and it's important to look at your listing as unbiasedly as possible. Like we all have premium products. I think my stuff is the best stuff in the world, but sometimes it takes, you know, like my wife or a friend or like a colleague in the space to look at my listing and be like, well, what does this mean? Or I don't understand, you know, so that's important to me is getting that outside perspective. When it comes to copy, I always tell people like at the very least read your copy out loud. And if it doesn't flow, then change it. If it doesn't sound natural, or even have the best thing to do is have somebody else read it back to you. Because you can really, if it doesn't flow when you talk about it, it's not going to flow when you think about it and it's going to break up somebody's thought process.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. And I actually want to see our wonderful faces. So I just shared this outline that I had up on the screen just to everybody in the chat, so you can download and look at it yourself. That's going to be a bigger guide when we're done, but that way you can see our faces and then you can reference back to that to those launch steps. Yeah, that's actually a really great tip, Marcus. I never really thought about that. Reading out loud, it sounds so basic, but it's actually a really, really great idea. Something else that's really cool that I've been using a lot lately, I haven't used it for Amazon listings, but it actually might work really well, is if you go into Google Docs, a lot of people don't know this, there's a Google Docs tool. That's a voice recognition tool. So it's kind of like Dragon Naturally Speaking, stuff like that, where you can literally push a button and then just start dictating and it'll just start filling it out in Google Docs. That's a really, really good way to write, find it kind of for anything, even including, you know, for Amazon, because then it's going to come out sounding, you know, really natural. And then you can go back and edit it. Not only that, but it's going to be really quick. You know, if you do like an outline of what you want your listing to cover and then you speak it, you actually might get some, you know, some really cool content that way. So something to think about and possibly try. now, Marcus, you know, there's always a debate about like back-end keywords, subject keywords, all those kinds of things. What do you guys tell your clients? What do you do for those?
For back-end keywords? Like what to use or?
Well, just what's your theory on that? I know that like people are always like, should I use brand names? Should I use,
you know? Are we going to talk about conspiracy theories?
No, anything. I love that. Those are the best things.
Yeah, I mean, I keep it pretty simple. Keep it limited to the 250 bytes or characters, whatever you want to call them. There's no need to repeat a keyword. So if I've got beard oil in my title, obviously I've got it in my title. I'm not going to have beard or oil in my back end terms. You know, and I like to follow what Amazon says as much as possible. So I really just kind of follow that. I do use some tools to kind of decide, and I'm always testing, and I think that's maybe a fault of mine. But I'm always looking to see which one's maybe a higher traffic search phrase or search or a keyword, and maybe try to input that in my title and in the bullet points or description and try to see if, you know, see if any rankings increase just naturally.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. And I actually don't think that's a bad thing. I think testing your listing is probably one of the best things. That's, you know, back to like tending your garden. That's one of the best things that, and what tons and tons of people don't do is to go back and re-optimize the listing. They'll optimize it and then they'll leave it alone. You know, but what people get, you know, what you can do, some of the things you can do to really get that thing dialed in is look at your search term report on your PVC and see what you're converting for there. Those are really good keywords that you want to probably, you know, include into your listing. Like Marcus was talking about, in our testing, you know, listing optimization wise, we think three is the magic number. So like if you have an important phrase in your title, you want it at least in like your bullet point and then in your description as well. If you really want to hit it hard, you might want to put that phrase, you know, more than once in the description or in the bullet points. But it all comes down to testing, you know, depending on the category and, you know, the fields available. It really, it can really make a big difference on just a few factors like that. Also, what a lot of people don't realize is the more fields that you fill in the back end, so like, you know, color, material, all those things, Amazon indexes, and those are a great way to get a little extra bump. So, Marcus, do you sell the stuff that you sell? Is it in like plastic or glass or like what's...
Glass.
Like, what's that?
Glass bottles.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So do you have any breakage issues there?
No, I have I wrap it in, I've got these little pouches that are bubble pouches, and then I throw it in a padded envelope as well. So
yeah. So that's
probably, I haven't had any yet.
Right. So that's good. So that's, you know, but that's a super premium. Like when you get somebody, when you give somebody something in a bottle that's glass, that's so rare nowadays because of the breakage issue. That's, you know, that feels super premium. And so, Marcus, I'm sure you have, you know, glasses material somewhere in your thing, or you might highlight that somewhere. Yeah. You know, those are kind of extra things that you want to really think about when you're building that listing, is kind of the add-on, information that you add to that listing, which is going to get indexed, and possibly give you some extra bumps. So Amy, you're a listing guru too. Are you going to jump in and, are you only observing today?
No, so but one of the, I thought it was interesting you were talking about, you know, just kind of speaking, because if in my mind the first bullet is really where you have to get your customer's attention, and I always think of that as the strongest selling point in a listing. And so something, an exercise that I do with folks is I say, okay, if you're at a market and you're at an outdoor market and you're selling your beard oil, and I'm walking by and I kind of glance in your direction, what is the one thing you're going to say to me to get me to stop and talk to you?
Hey, hey, that you is, don't have a beard. Hey, you don't have a beard.
That is the same. That's the same thing that you should be thinking about using in your listing. Because, you know, if you take a sales course, it says it, you know, in any sales course will tell you it takes an average of 12 touches, 12 times of talking to someone before they'll even make a buying decision with you. And when you think about on Amazon, you really only have like less than 30 seconds of somebody just glancing at your hero image and then maybe clicking on your listing or your advertisement. And they're really just going to look at those images and maybe like your first bullet point. So if you can't capture their attention with your main selling point of why they should actually, why they need this in their life, you're going to miss out on those sales. So that's my main thing that I try to have people do is like, hey, think about your strongest selling point. If I was walking by you in a market, what would you say to me to get me to stop and really consider your product?
Yeah, absolutely. That is a great point. Sorry, I think I had the settings wrong. So everybody jumping in had a hot microphone. So I just figured out, I'm still learning Zoom. You know, this is our what, third or, well, technically the fourth episode, but yeah, I'm still getting that dialed in one of these days, right? Okay, cool. So let's move on from that. So the next step is set up your Amazon PPC for success. And hopefully I'm not, am I screaming, Michael? I saw you take your earbud out. Hopefully I'm not too loud.
No, I was listening for something in the background.
Okay, great. So set up your PPC for success. And since it's seems like Marcus needs help on this one. I'll field this. Yeah. So some of the things you want to do when you set up your PPC for a launch, PPC should always be used in conjunction with a launch. So you want to at the same time. And one of the things you want to do is as soon as, what I tell people is if it's a new product and it's getting shipped from China or something like that, or if you're, you know, doing it yourself like Marcus. You know, once you get that listing, that listing set up, you want to go directly to your PPC campaigns and set them up beforehand. That way you're not in a rush. When you get your stuff, you're ready to rock. You just turn it from pause to on and you go. One thing you want to do, and it depends on your budget. The way I do it, is I probably have a bigger budget than most, but, I'll do like $100 a day and, I'll do my auto campaign and I'll go like anywhere from a penny to like 10 cents over, what Amazon's suggested bid is. And the reason you want to do this is you want to get a lot of action up front. You want to see what people are, you know, what Amazon sees your listing as being relevant for, because you're not getting the keywords that you're getting impressions for are what Amazon's going to consider your listing being relevant for. So you want to take a look at that. And then you also, of course, want to see what you're converting for. Now, a cool thing to do or something that could work well is if you hit it really hard, really fast, you know, if you start getting conversions really quickly, like within the first like 3 to 5 days, then you can go and say, okay, so I got 5 conversions on these keywords. These might be keywords that I want to, you know, I want to look at in incorporating in my launch, in my 2-step URLs or whatever URLs you're using. I know that Sixleaf has some, they have some clever names for URLs, which I love. Like, I think it's like Sidewinder and some other, I can't remember the other ones, but I'm sure Marcus will fill us in. But you want to make sure that you got that auto campaign at least spooled up. The other thing you want to do is now once you get to the point where you're launching and you've got kind of your keywords that you've got from your PPC or wherever you're getting those keywords from that you're really trying to target, that's where you want a manual campaign. And you want to keep that manual campaign super tight in the beginning. So maybe the 5 keywords, say you're trying to rank for 3 to 5 keywords off the bat. You want to put those keywords in that manual campaign and like go super, super hardcore on it. So, you know, you probably won't get a lot of matches with exact. So I would say generally phrase is what you'd want to stick to. So you want to do say 5 phrase match keywords and you want to like crank the bid once again and try to really nail that those keywords early on, because what that's going to do is it'll help with your launch, and it'll send extra signals to Amazon that that you're super relevant for those keywords and that you're going to make sales for those keywords. So,
Andy, can we talk really quick about a common pitfall that people fall into? I often hear my PPC is not working, and well, I'll go out and look at their campaign, and they're bidding lower than the suggested bid.
Yeah.
So what's happening is you're not getting the conversion data. So you have to think about PPC is a bidding war, right? It's a bidding process. So when Andy says you need to be bidding over that suggested bid, you have to think, if you're bidding super low, if the suggested bid is $1 and you're bidding 50 cents lower than even the range, where is your ad going to be placed? Okay, think about that. If your ad is buried, nobody's going to click it. And also, you're not going to get the customer mindset. Now, if you're at the top of page one for water bottle, do you think you're going to get some clicks and some conversions? Probably, right? And you're going to be able to rank for that. Where the pitfall that people fall into is they don't bid enough to even get that customer data to understand where people are clicking and buying under what keywords. They bid too low, and then they're like, well, my PPC is not working. So in the beginning, yeah, you got to kind of, we've talked about this before, right? Go a little negative, because you've got to get that extra data, that golden information, so that later you can create a super awesome manual campaign and really target, lock into those keywords that you know your customers are going to buy for.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize with launches, you're going to go negative. You know, everybody thinks that, you know, and I see this all the time, people posting like, yeah, I launched and, you know, I'm down all this money or whatever. And I always, you know, tell them, if you've done your due diligence, you know, stay the course. You're going to lose money in the beginning. Some of our products, we lose money for like the first 2 months, but then guess what? Like every month after that, it's just like, you know, a hockey puck. So you really have to think about, you know, the investment up front. It's just like anything. If you invest up front, you're going to make it in the long run, but make sure you're doing your due diligence. Otherwise, you're just going to burn that money. So yeah, that's how to set up your Amazon PPC for success. The next one is find your ideal customer avatar. I'm just starting to learn. That's one of my, you know, Marcus was, you know, saying that he has problems with PPC. You know, and I know Amy and I have talked about this before, is the best thing you can do for yourself is know what your weakness is and hit that hard. Like right now, like all my YouTube stuff, like all my audiobooks, like everything is like hitting all my weaknesses, not my strengths. People tend to gravitate towards their strengths. You know, like if they're good at something, they're like, oh, I'm going to listen to books on that, or I'm going to do this or that. That's actually the wrong thing. You want to go and nail the stuff that you're not good at and admit it and, you know, and then go after that stuff. So that's one kind of thing that I'm learning along with systems. You know, that was my other, Marcus was talking about systems. He had issues with that. That's the other thing I'm really trying to look into. And then delegating, that's another huge thing of mine, because I'm such a perfectionist and, you know, I want to like have my hands in everything. But when you're trying to grow a business, that just doesn't work. So those are kind of my weaknesses, and those are kind of the things that I'm, you know, looking to improve. Marcus, do you do much on customer avatars?
So for my brand, that's something that like, it's still not the easiest thing to do, but I try to force that into, like my copy and then like my site and kind of design, and then kind of through pictures and social media, try to figure out, you know, exactly who that person is. Cause you can figure out what your customer avatar is. Then that's how you design everything. That's how you take your pictures or your lifestyle and action photos. That's how you write your copy. That's how you do social media. So it's not something that I'm good at necessarily, but it's something that I at least I'm conscious about.
Yeah, all right. Amy, are you gonna unmute Amy and because you probably do that more than Marcus and I. So I'd love to hear your input on that.
On customer avatar or
yeah, on customer avatars. Yep. Or like, are there any tools you use, or like how are you? You know, how are you finding your customers? I don't know if you don't have to give away any secrets, but, you know, I know for Barkus, you know, he's not looking for 20-year-old, women who are into, bikinis and nightlife, you know?
So honestly, the way that I study my customer is I use a business plan template by Score. It's a free business plan template, but it actually forces you to go through and study your market. So you have to answer certain questions about your market, and it forces you to go out and go, okay, well, what is the age of my customer? And what are the trends? And what are the things? So I let keywords guide me a lot when it comes to Amazon research. And I don't actually use a lot of keyword tools. I use the search bar because the search bar is the most updated, the most updated terms that customers are typing in to Amazon and Google. And then I also use, some trends tools. I see what's trending on social media. I look on Pinterest. I see what people are pinning. And of course, it depends, beard oil. I don't know if my customer would be on Pinterest, right? But you have to find out where is your customer. And, is your customer, a lot of times, we've talked about Facebook ads in the past, like people run Facebook ads and they're like selling a baby pacifier. And it's like, what are you, with no discount or anything, it's like, nobody's going to leave their Facebook feed to go buy that.
Right. So
you just kind of have to understand your customer's habits, and you build your avatar around, like, where does your customer hang out? And I find the best way for me to do that after I've done my initial research of something that I'm passionate about and I think is a good idea, then I go out and I Google the same questions that I'd have as a customer. So, how do you, do this? So if it's a product that solves a certain problem, I Google that and I see what kind of things people are pinning, what kind of things people are writing about. And then I discover, okay, maybe other people are searching for that too. If I start typing it in and the Google search bar finishes it for me, that's a good sign, because I know other people have that same problem too. So that's kind of how I go about the customer avatar.
Yeah. So another thing that works really well, which I don't know, a lot of people might not know about, is you can actually go in Facebook, there's analytics that you can actually look at, not only your group, but like your page, things like that. Go in that and look at your analytics, because depending on, what industry you're in, you can look and see that, majority of the people interacting with your, kitty litter postings are, women aged 30 to 40, then that's a pretty good indication that, those are your target customers. So, know who your customer is, and that's, use all the tools available to do that. So that is kind of a good way. And then also common sense, like Amy was saying, Pinterest might not be the ideal place for beard oil, but, LinkedIn might be, or, Twitter or
Reddit,
I bet it's Instagram actually.
Reddit.
Reddit is a customer.
Good, yeah.
That's pretty smart. That's a good observation. I bet there is a lot of bearded men on Reddit. I bet Instagram is pretty good too, though, because a lot of bearded photo pictures are kind of cool, and they're they're getting good at doing that. So at taking pictures about that. So that's interesting. All right, cool. All right, so moving on. The next step is we need to know the daily sales quantity to get to page one or whatever your target is. If it's a product that's super, super, super competitive, page one might be, something that is going to be a really hard thing to obtain, especially if you're going up against huge multi-million dollar multinational corporations. The funny thing is probably at least 50% of more big brands on Amazon are still clueless, which is good for all of us. But that's going to change. So, people, you need to keep that in mind as you get into Amazon. But anyway, there are a lot of tools that can help you with that. I'm sure Marcus does Six Leaf probably has something that'll tell you how many sales per day that you need.
We don't have any software built in right now. It's something that's in the pipeline for development.
Okay.
But typically we just get with people and we look at it ourselves and we look at some software. We have some access to like the analytical data from what we've been doing. But we take, for example, like we might look at Helium 10 and look at somebody's listing, and Helium 10 might say, oh, it takes 500 units, but they're at the bottom of page one. So we take that into consideration. You're not interested in 500 units to get to the top of page one.
Yeah. So, Oh, no, go ahead. Sorry about that.
Oh, no. And that's kind of really our process right now. So, because it gives the customer a little bit more insight about not only what we do, but what they need to do.
Yeah. Right. Right. So, yeah. And then, so, the Seller SEO Chrome extension will give you those numbers as well. Of course I looked at it this morning and there's an issue with it. So I have our developer working on it right now. But that will give you sales estimates per day and then 30 days out, you know, how many units you want to try to target. Now, before anybody attacks me and says it's completely wrong and the data sucks and all that, it's just like anybody, it's an algorithm. So, you know, it's going to be different than, you know, if you tell me that our data is different than Helium 10 or some other tool, I'm going to tell you, well, that's because they're, you know, they're taking a different approach than we are. And that's going to be true of every tool. So, you know, use what tool works best for you, is what I say, you know, test and use what tools work best for you. So quantity wise, why you're looking at those numbers is generally you want to get close to or over those sales numbers per day or per 30 days in order to rank for that keyword. So, you know, that's kind of the basics of that, why you're looking at that number. So the next thing that you want to look at, of course, is to make sure you have enough units in stock. This is kind of a big one because people will do a launch and then they'll stock out and then you lose momentum, you know, pretty quickly. So, once again, you should be looking at those sales numbers, your target numbers, you know, just do the math. Generally I say, you know, or I want people or myself to have three times as much as I expect to do in the promotion at a minimum. So, you know, say I'm targeting something and I'm doing 10 units a day for 7 days, that's 70 or, 10 units a day, 7 days. Why can't you do 70 units? make sure that you have at least, let's see, 7, 140, 2, 10. Make sure you have at least 210 units in stock for that example. Marcus, is that kind of what do you guys tell your clients in terms of stock?
That's something we bring up when we first start engaging with somebody. Anyways, it's not necessarily, we don't necessarily talk about, hey, you have a certain amount, but it's just taken into consideration. Yeah. You know, like for me, if I was going to launch a brand new product right now and rank on page one, at the top of page one for beard oil, it might take me 1,000 units over the course of a couple of weeks. So if I don't have that inventory, then I would focus on another keyword that I do have that I can allocate that inventory for. You know, and it's like you were saying that like the worst thing you could do is run out of inventory, because then you just literally just, you know, lit a bunch of cash on fire, because you get to the page one and you stop selling, you start losing rank pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah. So make sure that when you're doing these, like I said, you can, you know, there's no like exact science to that. Yeah, try to make sure that you have enough stock, you know, enough units in stock, to make sure that you're not going to lose momentum. Otherwise, if you do stock out, then it's, you know, then it's going back to a relaunch, which is a whole nother subject. So, the next step is, how to pick the right keywords to rank. I think, from what I've seen from Six Leaf, they've kind of got the same theory that I do where, you know, and this is a huge mistake that a lot of people make is, you know, picking like the first, like top 3 to 5 keywords, which is what you don't want to do generally, because what will happen is you'll burn through a ton of cash and not rank initially. What you want to do is you want to do kind of like a reverse pyramid type setup where you want to go for the middle or, you know, lower end keywords. And then once you get ranked for those, that's when you start, you know, going towards the larger volume, harder keywords. The reason for that is, you know, once you start with the lower long tail and the medium tail keywords, those are actually going to pull your rank and, you know, they're going to start pulling your whole listing up. So once you get to that point, you know, you're starting at a higher baseline. If you start from zero, it's going to be really, really hard to rank for those keywords.
Yeah. I mean, I actually agree. That's the way I prefer to do things. I know the general strategy, the most popular one is to go after the most relevant keywords and the highest ones. And again, as long as if you've got the budget to do it, then go for it. You know, I don't know if I would necessarily go after a super aggressive, if there's a keyword that like beard oil and you have zero reviews and you don't have a review system in place. I don't know if I would go after that only one, but I love going after the low volume and mid volume keywords because number one, they're easier to go after. So you can save a little bit of money, but you do your keyword research first. You might be able to identify several mid volume or low volume keywords that your main competitors aren't on because they don't care. Because they've been doing it forever and they're happy with what they got. But it could be easier if you convert on those too. So, and another thing too that a lot of people don't realize, like Again, I'm a huge nerd and I test stuff all the time, and probably it's a fault of mine. But if I target, I've done this several times and I actually wrote an article over the summer about it. You can target multiple keywords that have the same keyword, the same seed word in it. If you target them at the same time, it can boost the rankings of that core keyword. Now, it doesn't mean I can target a bunch of low volume keywords that have beard oil in them and just get, and then just magically be on page one for beard oil. But it does help that seed, that if you do it right, it does help that seed word.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. And that rarely gets mentioned. So I'm glad you mentioned that. That is an absolutely a great technique. So what Marcus is talking about is, like, say, once again, we love the water bottle example. So say your target, you know, was a water bottle. You would do, you know, stainless steel water bottle for bike, water bottle with straw, because in all of those phrases, we're going after the main phrase of water bottle. So that way we're converting on those long tails. And then we're also getting a little bit of juice for that, because the way that Amazon ranks that, they're ranking each individual keyword along with the phrase. So you're getting a little bit of juice every time one of those keywords converts. And that's actually a really, really good technique, is to target variations of phrases to target your main phrase.
And a lot of things that I see people do too is they'll use tools to find keywords, which is great. It's great to use tools. They can very quickly search all of the keywords at one time and scrape them. But then often people will not actually go out on Amazon and look at that keyword. They won't put it right in the search bar and see what kind of products come up for that keyword. So it's a good idea when you think that you have the best keywords based on your tools to actually go out and look at them and see, you know, what competitors are doing. And so one of the exercises I like to do is I like to pretend that I know nothing. I just know that I need a bottle that holds water and stays cold, right? And I'll start typing and see what Amazon and Google, because I try to rank for both when I write my listings, right? I try to see what Amazon and Google are suggesting to me. And I often discover keywords that I didn't even, that maybe the tools wouldn't have given me. Or, maybe I hadn't, you know, thought of that in that of my product being called that. So often people will look at a competitor and go, oh, that's my main keyword. It's the same one that they're going for, right? And you might miss out on, a pocket, kind of like Marcus was talking about, where it's, you know, underutilized and people, your competitors aren't even selling there, but customers are looking there for a product like yours.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. yeah, cool. I think, all right. I think we got those pretty clear. If anybody's got any, questions on what we've talked about so far, feel free to drop them in the comments. And then we'll also kind of do a Q&A at the end too. If anybody's got any follow-up questions and stuff we've covered so far. Another step I have in here is get social, getting the right influencers, not only that, but utilizing your own social channels. If you haven't set up social channels yet for your brand, huge, huge, huge mistake. Once again, this was one of the things that I had to come, you know, over the last few years. I'm an introvert. I used to hate being on camera. I used to hate like doing this kind of stuff. But I forget the book that I'm listening to right now, but it's a fantastic book, because it's just like, the more you do things that you hate, the more you're going to like them and the better you're going to get at it. So those are, once again, you know, it's like going where you're weak and making yourself strong there. So Marcus is laughing at me. make sure that when you're setting up your brand, get your social like set up right away. And I've shared some tools before, but there's some like automation tools they're not ideal. People are going to be like, oh, you're going to get crappy followers, or you're going to get, I mentioned the tool in a previous episode called InstaZood, which is like an automated like and comment and for Instagram. And it's a really awesome tool if you're just starting out, just to kind of get because when you've got like 10 followers or 5 followers, it's like there's no snowball effect. It's so hard to get more people, because they'll be like, oh, this dipshit's got 5 followers. Why do I want to look at his picture or whatever he's posting, you know? So you want to kind of get that first base of followers. So that's something I definitely suggest is try to build your social following early on. And some ways that you can do that as well is to pay influencers to mention your account or to mention your product. That should be a part of your launch. You should be throwing, you know, the quote unquote sales blitz. You should be throwing anything and everything you can at your launch in that short period of time. The more signals you get to Amazon from different sources, the more natural it looks and the better you're going to rank. And you'll see some crazy stuff. I mean, we've gotten, like I said, this last Christmas, I was bragging so much about some of these Christmas keywords that we ranked for, because it was like pie in the sky. I never, ever thought we'd rank for some of these keywords, but you're talking like top five, which is insane. But you know, that's how we got there, is we just really diversified the traffic that we were sending there. So get social, get the right influencers. If you don't know how to find influencers, it's not that hard. You can, either, you know, direct message them on the various social channels, or there's services out there. There's one called Tomlinson. There's a bunch. Vargas, do you do any social influencing, marketing, and do you have any tools that you use, for that?
Yes, no. I recently just got started doing this. And I mean, it's one of those things that it's just a learned behavior, like you being in front of the camera, like me, I'll talk to a brick wall. It just really doesn't matter. but for me, like reaching out to people in that kind of manner is something that, like, I've got to get used to. And I want to tell a quick story. I mean, everything you said is hit the nail on the head. But here locally, there's somebody that I had no idea who it was. But we had a lot of mutual friends. This guy posted in Facebook, "Hey guys, I'm looking for a new beard oil. What do you recommend?" And I mean, I got tagged after tag after tag after business tag, and me personally. And I promise you, in 30 minutes, I had like 10 sales. Like, it was like, and I was like, "Oh shit, this is real," you know? So it's, you know, all these tools are great, but reaching out to your local, the people in the area, because everybody has local influencers. Like, it doesn't, I mean, and I live in a fairly small town, so it doesn't mean that I can't find those people. But if you also already have a social media following, like, what's his name? Gary Vaynerchuk. He talks about this. Like, yep. If you live in Seattle and you sell supplements, start looking for people who work out and exercise all the time on Instagram. Like, look for that hashtag. Go in there and be like, "Man, I love what you're doing. We live in the same area." You know, you can either try to pitch them there or be like, "Hey, can we grab coffee? I've got this great product. I think it might be a great fit for you." You know, so there's so many ways to reach out to people and engage with, but you just got to start doing it, start trying. Again, the tools are great and it can automate some of that process, but I love the local human experience. And I was telling this guy, Jay, I was like, "Man," I said, "I just need to find like 1,000 of you now." So...
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I'm actually learning that a lot more. You know, my wife Molly just became a real estate agent, and I'm doing all her marketing for her. You know, because that's where I get my fun. You know, it's like I get to dabble in other areas, which is always super fun for me. And so the local touch is that's a really good point. And what you need to realize is if you can connect, like Marcus said, with a lot of local people who are into what you're into. You know, it's kind of a snowball effect. You know, it's like, I talked about that earlier for, you know, just starting the social, traction, but, you know, some things you can think about doing, like Marcus, you know, Marcus, maybe he's going to have, you know, brew and beers, and throw like a little like social in his town, and say like, "Hey, the first beer's on me." You know, can you imagine that? You get like 100 dudes showing up and he might not sell, you know, that day, but like people are going to know who he is. When people have a personal connection with you, they're much more likely to buy from you because they go, "That Marcus guy, oh, he's hilarious. And he, you know, he can drink 10 beers in a sitting. He's amazing. That guy's a badass," you know? And like, so, those are something you really, really want to think about.
I did the same thing in my local market. I went to a local market and set up a booth, and I just kind of just talking to people. And yeah, I had some of my products there for sale, but it was really just about brand awareness. Just talking to people, you know, showing them my product and you know, seeing what they were thinking about it. And I grew my email list that day by like 100 people. So I had my phone out there with MailChimp, and I'm like, "Hey, do you want to subscribe for our launch?" You know, and by the time I had launch, I had this great initial starter email list of local fans that I had talked to personally. And then the other thing is organic reach, right? So I was talking to somebody the other day about creating a Pinterest pin because, you know, people go to Pinterest with the intent to buy. They go to Pinterest to shop. And this entrepreneur was going to create a Pinterest pin and just promote it. But they hadn't built out anything on Pinterest yet. So the thing is, the reason I have like 300,000 monthly viewers on Pinterest, and it's because I've created five boards of things that my customer avatar is interested in, and I regularly pin to those boards. So the difference when I pin a new pin is that I get so much organic reach and impressions for free because I've built up that following over time. So if you think about, you know, regularly posting content on Insta, on Pinterest, and actually building out your presence on those pages, it's going to really pay dividends for you, and you're going to be able to post on Facebook, post on Instagram, and not even have to promote it because your reach is so far already. And then that person's going to share it, and you know, it's going to go a lot further. So don't forget about organic reach and the power of social media sharing.
Yeah, absolutely. And one other quick thing before we move on, because we have a lot of points left, and we all like I would love to do longer, you know, but I know Amy, you have dinner soon and Marcus is probably like, hey, it's almost Miller time. So,
oh no, I can talk about this stuff all day long.
Oh, well, I always do extra innings when Amy bows out. I always do extra innings, so we can do extra innings, Marcus. The other thing that I wanted to mention, which is a cool hack that we've kind of found now that I'm promoting for Bali, is a super underutilized marketing channel. And I hate that I'm giving this away because it's kind of a ninja hack that not a lot
of people
give
it up, Andy. Give it up.
Amy, why do you always make me give it up? the local buy sell trade groups. Like put your beard oil on there and say, hey, I got this beard oil, and it's lightly used, you know, or whatever. Like, but that's like, even if nobody buys from you, just getting eyeballs on it. Like if Marcus is posting his beard oil on there, like every couple of days, you know, a different like scent or size or whatever. So he won't get in trouble. So he's not spamming, you know, but like, as long as he's getting in front of those eyeballs all the time, like people are going to start. It's all about, you know, I think Amy, you said like 12 touch points, or I've heard seven, whoever knows what the number is. Oh, it's a lot. Is the more people, the more, you know, time you get in front of somebody, the more they're going to think about you, the more they're going to trust you, the more they're going to know about your brand, all those kinds of things. So just, you know, really remember that. Another cool thing is, Amy's talking about social networks. A tool that we use, which like everybody should use, is Buffer. There's a lot of different tools out there, but Buffer is an awesome tool. You can connect all your different social networks, and when you send a post, it goes to all of them, just boom, at the same time. You can schedule them. You can do all those kinds of things. So it's definitely a great way to continuously have content flowing, and also, you know, get people in, and their eyeballs on your stuff as much as possible. Yeah, the next point, I already touched on this, but kind of I'll go a little bit more into that, is step eight is make the traffic look as natural as possible. So if you're using a launch service, along with that launch service, you want to be doing a ton of other things. You want to be doing, you know, PPC, you want to be doing influencer marketing, you want to be doing, we've had awesome success, as Amy knows, with Google Ads. You want to do Pinterest, you want to do, you know, like all, in other words, the way you have to think about it is you want every single place that you can post a link or an image during your launch, you want to hit all of those at the, you know, at simultaneously to really make those social signals and those signals of coming off of Amazon to Amazon as strong as possible. The more diverse the traffic, the better, the more, you know, the more it's going to look to Google that you know, this is a natural bump, and people are going to demand this product.
And I think people forget, they overthink the promotion strategy, right? So if you're creating like a 20% off promotion to start with or something, just share the link on your social networks and say, hey, we're running 20% off right now. People are like, oh, I got to create a promo code and I don't know how to do that. And they get overwhelmed. It's like, share your link, you know, like say, hey, we're running 20% off right now. Create a graphic on Canva that, you know, says 20% off right now. You don't have to actually have the promo code. You can just say, we're doing this right now. You know, just sharing it, getting more traffic to your listing, use a two-step URL, even better, right?
Yep. Yep. So, yeah, absolutely. And however you can do it, you know, the more, it, you know, it's like, it's funny because, you know, once Amazon started cracking down on the whole like review for promotion thing, for a long time there, people were scared of using, you know, launch services, and then people were like, oh, it doesn't work. Yes, it does work. you know, all this debate. Bartis, I know you can chime in on this, but I always, always laugh when I see that because it's not changed, folks. I'm not saying you need to use a promotion service, but to me, it's a tool in the toolbox. You want, like I said, to get as much traffic and as many sources as possible. And you know, those launch services, you might have to dig a little deep in your pockets because you're going to be usually giving some fairly large discounts, but you're never, ever going to get that kind of volume from anything else. I mean, if you try to pay for Facebook ads or you know, any type of paid traffic, unless you have a huge social following, dollar for dollar, you're not going to beat it. And that those signals of sales are not going to really come from, you know, from other sources as well. So to me, I highly recommend using a launch service in conjunction with all these different sales signals if you really want to hit it hard. If you've got something that's super niche and you don't need, you know, you might not need a lot, then, you know, you might want to save the money. But to me, it's a worthy investment if you're serious. And like I said, do your due diligence so that you're not spending money on something that's not going to convert in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. I won't talk about it too much because I could talk about it forever. I'll say this, like, you know, Amazon knows where all the traffic is coming from. Amazon knows who Six Leaf is. We've been around forever. Same thing as AMZ Blitz as well. And, you know, pushing things from Facebook, Amazon knows, you know, so it's, you just have to make sure that your promotions are just aligned with basically Amazon's terms of service. And they really follow like the FTC guidelines, Federal Trade Commission. As long as you have a time limited discount of a real product to a real person, that's all Amazon cares about. They don't really care about your URL. Yes, some URLs work better than others. They don't care about what your keyword you're ranked for. They don't care about the discount. As long as it's a time limit, that's all they care about. As long as you're trying to honestly push a sale of a real product to a real customer, they're not worried about anything else. What they don't want you to do is use that promotion to send out fake orders, drive fake traffic, get reviews nefariously, that kind of stuff. So I think a lot of people overthink. They think, well, which URL is TOS compliant? Which launch service does or doesn't work? It's not about that. It's like, what are you trying to do with your product? You know, there's good services and bad services out there with anything. And that's kind of neither here nor there, but you know, if that's what you're trying to do, if that's your intent, then you really don't have anything to worry about. Amazon doesn't care. It's a sale. That's all it is.
They actually, I mean, that's always my, you know, whenever somebody argues me that on that point, I'm like, so you're telling me Amazon is mad at me or you or whoever's doing the launch for sending them free traffic on customers they may not already have that may not shop on Amazon already, or that may sign up for a Prime account that day because they got, you know, 90% off of your product.
Think about it too, man. Like if I give out 100 units a day for 10 days, and I give it out for a dollar, I still have to pay my regular FBA fee. So Amazon making money either way. And like you said, they're getting free traffic. And they even talk about the statistics of how many people come to Amazon and buy one thing, but they end up buying something else.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So, yep. Agreed. Okay. So we'll put that to rest. All right. Step nine. There's been a huge, huge debate about this lately. You know, do super URLs or two-step URLs, whatever you want to call them. It's a URL that has a keyword in, you know, contained, or it's, you know, a URL that's, you know, doing multiple steps, things like that. Everybody's, you know, there's debate for a while. They don't work. Amazon's going to get you in trouble for them. You know, all this different stuff. Amy's going to do the cat, the cute cat. How am I supposed to beat that?
You can't.
Right? I can't. So, Marcus, I'll let you touch on this for a while. I saw you on, I think it was, what podcast was it? Where it was like all the launch companies recently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. AMPM. I got into a few arguments.
Yeah. No, which was awesome because, you know, like being in the industry, I love seeing those interactions. But the gist of what everybody from all the launch companies said, which, you know, which was like, hey, assholes, yes, they still work. Like, we have like 100.
I didn't say assholes.
I'm saying it because I'm so tired of seeing it. It's like, here's 100 launches and every single one of them increases in rank. Now, there are times where people do a launch and it won't work. And there are, you know, of course, there's like 100 different factors, but generally there's a good reason for it. Either Amazon's got some signals that you've tried to cheat, you've got fake reviews, your keyword stuffing, you know, there's some reason why you're not. It's not like whenever I see like people are like, I have no idea why, you know, my product's not ranking. It's like, there's a reason, like, and you probably know what it is. But anyway, Vargas, talk to me about, you know, what URLs you think, and I really love, Six Leaf's blog. If you guys haven't checked it out, they do a lot more than I do because they have a bigger staff. I don't have as much time. But I love reading this stuff because I'm like, yes, I agree. Yes, I agree. Yes, I agree. Exactly. 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 And they do a lot of, you know, a lot of studies and a lot of testing on URLs and things like that. So Vargas, I think I read recently that you guys did a test and that, you know, all of the URLs still work, but of course some work better. You know, like storefront's not working as well. But brand is working, fairly well, even though the storefront I've tested, I still work fairly well. I don't know.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know exactly, you know, what the difference is. And then I think I saw a post from Anthony that was like, no, it doesn't matter. It all freaking works. Use one of them. So what's kind of your theory on that? And what do you use and what do you suggest? And you know, what's your take on all that?
I'll touch on that. And then I'll touch on how to track results, because I have a different answer there. I think that for the most part, I think which URL to use some is something that really people overthink. You know, there's not a magical URL that just out trumps everybody 100% of the time in every category. You know, we see continued success with our HeatSeeker URL. It's been around since we started, and it's a search, find, buy method. And there's a bit more proprietary automation in place. I won't get into it, but I mean, you know, the two-step URLs are still really great. You know, I love using and recommending a two-step URL, like a brand URL or even storefront, is when you're not ranking for a keyword, but you're indexed. You know, if you're not within the first 20 pages, there's nowhere to send anybody to unless you use the brand URL or storefront or whatever two-step you use. You know, and people, again, that people talk about, well, there's QID stamps and there's timestamps in the URLs. There's a timestamp on every click on the internet, and that's what people don't realize. Like the timestamp is irrelevant.
Yeah.
Because again, Amazon can track it and see where it's coming from anyway. I just think it's a lot of things that get overanalyzed to a certain degree.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say tracking results. Like, I think it's really, really important to for everybody to really follow a certain set of metrics for your business. So, you know, tracking keywords is important, and you wouldn't believe how many people I talk to and like, hey, I'm tracking 3 keywords. What? Like, why aren't you tracking, you know, all the keywords that you can with whatever tool that you have? But track metrics like sessions and your conversion rate, you know, track your daily sales, like put all this stuff into a spreadsheet, or if there's a tool out there that works best for you, but track the specific metrics that you want to track. Because you can't measure anything if you don't track it. You know, if you don't know what your daily sessions rate average is over 30 days, like, you know, without promotions in there, then you can't measure it. You can't grow it. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's important to have those, however you do it. You know, I've got a small little spreadsheet that's super basic because I don't know anything about Excel, but it's just, I measure daily sessions and I measure the conversion rate and I watch that stuff through testing. I changed my title last night. So now I'm going to track my sessions. Did they go up, down? Did they stay the same? Or, you know, so, you know, tracking results allows you to really quickly see what's working and what's not working before, after, during a promotion or whatever, or with throughout testing. But then you can measure that, like, how do I scale it? So that's all I was going
to
say about
that. No, that's a great point. And yeah, I probably need to add that to my list, or actually, oh, that's the next step on my list there. So I did add that, how to track results. So yeah, that Vargas makes an excellent point there. If you're not keeping track of your keyword ranks, you have no idea how you're doing. I mean, that's the point there, is if you're just doing all these launches and doing all these things and you're not, you know, you're not, you know, digesting the data, then you're, once again, you're burning money. Don't burn money. You gotta go through the steps and make sure that you're doing your due diligence when it comes to tracking. If you're not tracking, you don't know how you're doing. So, how are you going to adjust or make changes or change your what you're doing if something's not working? So excellent point there.
And I will say this, it's hard because Amazon doesn't make it easy.
Yeah.
Seller Central reports were created probably 15 years ago, and I doubt they've really been optimized or touched since then. So we know it sucks to like dig through these reports. But it's important. It's just part of your business. So
there's a lot of really great YouTube videos out there to teach you how to like pull the reports and read them. And, at least, even though they are kind of archaic and hard to understand, at least there's that.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So let us go to the next. So what do I need to stick the results now? There's always, you know, people, I see this all the time in a bunch of groups. It's like, yeah, I've launched for 3 days and I ranked up to page two and now I've like fallen off a cliff or whatever. And like people are freaking out. Once again, there's a lot of different theories here, but I think most of like the launch companies and most of the larger sellers, people who kind of do this kind of stuff all the time are agreed. This seven to eight day window is kind of the minimum that you want to do a launch. Once again, Amazon wants to see natural looking sales. And not only that, but a progression of sales. You know, if you sell like 100 on Monday and then Tuesday you sell 10, guess what? Amazon's going to go, oh, all right, this dude did a blast and got 100 sales. And now, you know, they don't know what they're doing. So now they've turned that off, that funnel off, and now they've got 10 sales. So that's where you get all this, you know, this confusion. I do a two-week launch. I know that sounds like really long for a lot of people, but to me, a two-week launch seems to really kind of solidify, like telling Amazon, like, this deserves to be in this spot. So that's what I like to do. But what we always say is like, you know, 7 to 8. I always like 8 has in my testing has been like the magic number, but I think some people have said 7 is the minimum, but that's just kind of my 2 cents. What about you, Marcus?
As far as how many days, you know, it seems to be the more competitive the keyword, the more crucial it is to go out 10, 12, 14 days. You know, to use the example I keep using, if I was going to try to rank for beard oil, I know I can't do it in 3 days. It's probably going to take 2 weeks. And it might take a little bit longer after that because it's so competitive. There's so much search for it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, competition really does play a huge factor in, not only campaign length, but of course, but like discount. That's another thing people don't realize that I see a ton on our launch site is that it will get people, I'll get emails being like, hey, like I haven't sold any, like nobody's claiming my coupon. I haven't sold any, like what's going on? And I'm like, well, what's your product? And they're like, oh, it's baby bibs. And I'm like, oh, well, what's your discount? They're like, oh, 30% off. I'm like, that's why. I'm like, you need to know your product and, the competition and if it's a commodity or not, if you have something that's super unique, like for example, Amy, she invented her own product. So that's really unique. So she's got an advantage in the sense that, it's not a Me Too type product. It's not going to be a product that's, that's going to have a ton of competition, at least for that super close niche. If it's something something that's super commoditized, like a water bottle, for example, if you were trying to sell a water bottle, guess what? You're going to have to spend a ton of money and do a lot of work to get that thing ranked.
Yeah. Supplements, right?
There you go.
Supplements are tough. Like that, it's crazy.
Yeah. I think that, the discount, we all want to like not go into the hole, but it's advertising. So whether I spend a ton of money on Facebook ads or whether, you know, somebody buys a billboard or gets a commercial created for local television or national or Super Bowl ads run a mil plus for what, 10 seconds. So that's advertising, Doritos might go do that, but they have to spend that money first. Now they have that capital, so it's different, but it's kind of the same thing. Like it's advertising, you're going to spend the money. So we want to spend as less as possible, but you got to understand if you have your product on a deal site, and if it's a mainstay item like a water bottle where it doesn't matter regardless of demographic or socioeconomics, everybody needs a water bottle to a certain degree, you know, or a coffee cup or whatever. Like those products, you still have to have a compelling offer with a launch service or a deal site. A lot of times when people don't know anything about your brand, you got to compete on price, even on a deal site. So, you know, 85, 90% off, that's kind of the sweet spot for most products. But Amy, you're right. Amy's right too. Like if it's a truly unique product, sometimes you can get away with 50%. Sometimes you can get away with 30% off, but you got to understand your market first. So like me, I can't push anything. If I want real volume each day, I got to go 90% or a dollar. I can't do 50% off. I might get one sale a day, two sales a day. And if that's what I want, that's okay.
I think that, you know, the Amazon has grown so much that the original mentality was that you could launch this product and make $1 million on Amazon, you know, and people kind of forgot about advertising. And nowadays it's very competitive and you need to be prepared to, and the algorithm has changed as well. And the amount of competitors has changed. So, I mean, you need to be prepared when you're sourcing a product and getting ready to launch it, you need to work advertising into your costs. You need to expect to need to advertise your product. It's, you know, just going through the invention process, it's just a good idea if nobody knows about it, right? It's just a good idea. It's not a product. It's not anything. You know, if nobody knows about it, then, and I'm still, like, I've done a ton of advertising and still, you know, I told Rashid the other day, I'm like, nobody in the entire market knows about my product, right? I have to keep advertising and keep getting the word out through many different sources and keep building it out over time. So it's just important to expect to advertise, expect to tell potential customers about your product in many different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's see. Joanna said, is a two-step URL better equal to using search with your brand name when you are indexed but not ranking yet? As we mentioned, Joanna, most of these URLs will work. There's a lot of debate on that. You know, whether you're going to use a proprietary, you know, a link from a service or, you know, test it on your own. In our testing, without using any proprietary link, I would say in our testing, the absolute best link is add to cart, but that won't work for ranking keywords. So there's some debate. Well, there's some hacks that you might be able to use on that link, but add to cart is a super powerful URL. After that, we've seen that brand two-step URLs is also really works really, really well. Storefront, there's some debate on that, but I tested it over the holidays because some of my products weren't ranking very well at all or wouldn't even show up in my brand search, which will happen sometimes if Amazon deems that you're either not relevant enough or or for some reason you know they're not indexing you for that. Like I said, then you can kind of fall back on the storefront URL. The thing is, the storefront URL is I consider it like the crowbar of ranking for keywords. If you can't get another URL to work really well, you can crowbar it in using a storefront. Argus, what say you?
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think you touched on all the major points. I think you're solid. For once, I don't have anything to add. So.
All right, cool. Anybody else have like follow-up questions to what we've covered so far? I think that's pretty much it. I had a few more points, but we've kind of already covered it as we went. So, yeah. So we're into the question/bonus round portion. Wow, a surprisingly lack of questions this time.
I mean, we can go over these last three questions kind of quickly.
Okay. Oh, actually, yeah. We didn't really cover relaunch, did we?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So if people don't know, a relaunch is like, say you did a launch, like we were talking about earlier, and you like stocked out, for example, or you've got an old product that you just neglected for like a year, and all of a sudden you go, you know, I've got, you know, 1,000 of these sitting in my warehouse or in my garage. I want to get rid of them. You know, relaunch is pretty much, there's not a whole lot of difference between a relaunch and a launch. The only difference is you're not getting the honeymoon period, which if people don't know, Amazon gives you kind of a little extra boost when you first launch a new product. So you're not getting the advantage of that. So it's actually a little bit harder to do a relaunch than an actual launch. So, Marcus, any tips or anything you guys do differently for relaunches?
No, not necessarily. I think that, you know, you were talking about the boost. I think it's important for everybody to understand that, you know, Amazon measures your listing on hundreds of metrics. You know, there's probably several out there that we still don't know about. But one thing that they measure against is if you have multiple days, you don't sell anything. So that's why sometimes, you know, we call it bringing it back from the dead. But, you know, a relaunch or a maintenance launch or whatever you want to call it, if you have a dead listing, it's going to take more than, you know, if Helium 10 or Accelerate SEO recommends 1,000 units, for example, it might just take more because you've got to overcome that negativity. You've got to overcome those negative sales days. So you could still do it. It's just, is it in your budget to go after that keyword? You know, it's just something to think about. So like when you go to launch a product, you don't want to just create a listing and wait another month for your inventory to come in. You know, turn it on once you have inventory and then start rocking and rolling.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people don't think about that. They create the listing and then they leave it active. Or, you know, if it's a merchant fulfilled or something like that. That's not what we do, which I think works really well is you can set a launch date, like when the listing should be active in Seller Central. We use that a lot because that way the listing's up and people can check it out. But, you know, but then you're not going to lose that sales history.
Yeah.
So there's questions. Are hijackers after launching with a large discount just inevitable?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people have been trying to fight for that for ages. And, you know, it pisses me off too as a brand owner. You know, I'll go onto eBay and I'll see a bunch of my stuff on there. There's a few different ways to deal with that. One of them is to get pissed off and say, I'm never going to do a launch again. The other is to just say, hey, it's part of doing, you know, cost of doing business and go with the flow. It's inevitable. I mean, whenever you give somebody something away for cheap, it's not against the law. So people can technically resell. Now in your terms of service, like in our terms of service, if you do that, we boot you immediately and ban you, which I'm sure they do at Six Leaf as well. But it's a stress. Don't stress over things on your Amazon business. You know, it's the old adage, don't stress on things you can't control. It's one of those things where it has to be part of your equation. You're going to see resellers and it's going to piss you off. Now, if they relist on your listing on Amazon, technically they can't relist it as a new item. They're selling a used item. So that's how I get people. If they try to relist on my item on Amazon, I'm brand registered as well. So I can use that venue. But if you're not brand registered, if they're trying to sell it as new, you can tell Amazon, hey, that's not a new product. And that's how you can boot them off your buy box or your listing.
And they can get in trouble too for trying to sell a new product or a used product as new.
Correct.
And then we had another question about how many weeks should you pull to look at keywords? So I'm guessing that's how many weeks should you wait to look at keywords?
I assume they're talking about like the PPC reporting.
I think so.
Well, so there's a couple. Yeah, well, I mean, you constantly want to pull that report because there's going to be always new keywords coming out of the auto campaign. A lot of other questions that stem from that auto campaign are people are like, well, when should I turn it off? Don't turn off your auto campaign. You just reduce the bid. Never, ever turn off your auto campaign. Unless you're getting like a negative, you know, if you're getting like a 200 ACOS, you want to reduce the bid to where you can still get some impressions and get some conversions. Now, if you're at a 200% ACOS and you're continuously losing money and if you reduce your bid, you're not getting any impressions, that means you need to go back and look through and start doing some negative matching. That's kind of how you remedy that problem. Keyword-wise, I do, when I first launch, I do like a week's worth and then I pull the report and see if I have enough keywords. But you can look, you know, you can tell pretty quickly in the UI of Amazon, whether you're doing a lot of volume, and that's when you know to go look at the search report.
All right. And Lori wants to know, when you say storefront URL, is that the Amazon generated URL for your listing?
Storefront. We should do a whole session on two-step URLs. I did one for the Q4 summit that Augustus has every year and literally did like pretty much an entire session on two-step URLs and you know how they work and how to use them and stuff.
I'm making a note of that. Yep, I agree.
Storefront is simply like going to, like, so if you click on your brand name Actually, let me share my screen here real quick. I'll show people how to do that.
Oh, and Barkus put an example of a storefront URL in the chat. So
there we go. Yeah, use that. Well, I'll show you real quick how to find that. So yeah, so all you would be doing is you go to, all right, let's go to Anchor here. So you would click on your brand name like that, and then it brings you to kind of your brand page, and then you go to products, and then you can see here that Anchor Direct is, and then let's say we wanted headphones. So this would be your two-step URL. So it would be taking this and getting your keywords embedded. So in other words, if you send this keyword or this link out, then people are going to be able to rank for that keyword. So that's an example. There are some other tips where you can use, like if you use link generator in our Titan tool, it'll filter it down to the ASIN level so that if you're just trying to target like one specific product, you can use it like that. You can also use filters you might be able to do it directly from here.
And Garfield wants to know what specifically about the add to cart URL that makes it powerful if it doesn't rank keywords.
So this is kind of a mystery.
Conversions. That's what I think.
First of all, yeah, conversion rate's going to be off the charts. The other thing is that I've seen it over and over again. If you use an add to cart URL, like almost guaranteed you're going to get a Amazon Choice badge. And that's just for keywords. Generally, what I've noticed is the way you get the choice badge is it's going to be one of the phrases or keywords that's in your title. I don't know how they pick it, but from what I've tested on my own products, that's kind of what I see happening.
And to kind of add on to that too, if you use the add to cart URL, you can add a keyword on there if you want. I haven't tested that enough to see if that has an effect, but if you're tracking a lot of keywords, there's going to be something that moves up. So that'll be some data for you to look at. So if you're only tracking 5 keywords, you might not see your main keywords move up. I'm always a fan of tracking everything that you're at least indexed for. If you have that capability within the keyword tracker tool, you have, some people only have access to like 20 keywords or something, but if you've got the bandwidth, why not put them in there and look at them? You don't want to spend a lot of time on the low volume keywords, but you get sort of see trends too.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. And like you said, you can add a keyword. From what I've tested, though, I don't see it working, but I'm not sure.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where I haven't tested enough. I can't say definitively whether it works or not. But yeah, you can tack on a keyword to the add to cart. Yeah, cool.
And then Joanna says, yikes, I'm launching 2 of 2 and my listing has been live since I ordered inventory. What can I do to salvage this now?
Is it barcoded and all that already, Joanna? If it's not barcoded, I would literally just create a new listing at this point. If you can't do that, then...
She said, yes, it's barcoded.
Yeah, so live since I ordered inventory.
But if the inventory is not in stock yet.
Yeah, if it's an FBA item, you should be fine. Because technically, yeah, Amazon doesn't count it until it's first in inventory. So if it's an FBA item, you should be fine.
Yeah, if your inventory hasn't actually hit Amazon yet and been checked in, you're fine. It's different if you have inventory and your listing is actually live for customers to buy, then that's when you need to be worried about resetting it. But it says it shows as available on February 2nd. It's live for pre-order. Okay. So yeah, you're still okay.
Yeah, you're fine. If you have it on pre-order, that's good. Yeah, pre-order is fine. Yep, yeah. Pre-order is good. That's what we do. We do pre-order all the time. It's so underutilized. That's how you can actually get a lot of momentum before you even launch the product, is to do pre-order. So we do that a lot. That's actually a really good technique. Awesome. Have you seen any issues with targeting gift-related keywords for launches? No. I mean, you can
we
do it all the time. Yeah, they're awesome keywords. They're actually super underutilized. There's so many keywords in that realm that people don't think about that can rank really, really well.
The more new, unique your product too, because there's a wide array. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Marcus, please.
If you everybody type in gifts for women, there's tons of products out there right now. So the more unique your product is, the more it's going to stand out. But those are great. I mean, you know, and do some search. You're going to find some weird keywords that you might not realize, you know, that are related to gifts or seasonal keywords, I like to call them. So,
yeah. Cool.
And then what's the highest converting product insert offer and review follow-up system you have used or seen?
What about you, Marcus? Do you know? I can tell you my two cents, but I'll let you go first.
So on the product insert, I've got some information, but it's totally like, it's not kosher with Amazon. So we could talk about it, but it's not something I professionally recommend. If we were sitting in a bar hanging out, I would be like, hey man, try this, cause I know it works. The thing about the product inserts you've got to offer is like, what are you offering somebody? Are you offering them just to sign up to register for something? Nobody cares about that anymore because I can sign up and get on anybody's VIP list, you know, give them a reason, you know, hey, if you have, I don't know, if you have fitness equipment, like yoga mat or whatever, anything like that, workout equipment, give them a downloadable ebook. If you got a product insert, be like, hey, you know, go here, register, have them a landing page where they either go into a mini chat flow or email sequence and offer them a book. So give them some sort of value or reason because, I mean, I see it all the time. So as far as a review follow-up, again, like give them a reason to open the emails in the first place. If it just says, thank you for your order, then why would I already got one from Amazon that says, thanks. I don't need another one. So that, a lot of that follows into like, what kind of value are you bringing to that email? And what's the reason for opening the email? What I try to do in my email sequences is give them some information about the product. You know, like for the first email I have is it's really as simple as like, hey, thanks so much for your order. If you're just getting started, growing a beard or anything like that, here are some best tips and practices and directions for use. So it's a reason for somebody, hopefully everybody, to open the email. But then the second email, I tell them how you can use it as a shave oil. Like if you shave or trim your neckline. So it's a little bit of value added to that product that they might not have heard about before. So that's really the way I look at it is like, what is the product? What can you give somebody in exchange for their email address or a review?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not incentivizing them, but giving them value through copy or ebook or something. So.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. Absolutely. Giving value, you know, like you said, you know, otherwise people are going to just ignore it. I know Amy knows that I hate follow-up emails. I don't do them just because I hate receiving them as an Amazon customer. I don't blame anybody for doing them but most people aren't doing them like you're doing them, Marcus. If you're doing a follow-up with value, like you said, you're going to get a lot better response from that. I do product inserts and kind of like what my one little hack and what we do is we have a warranty that says like, hey, if you register on our site, we are going to give you an additional, like our lifetime warranty. And that's huge.
That works.
Yeah. People will actually go and do that because to them, it's like Marcus was saying, it's a value add. So that's something that definitely you want to think about doing is some kind of register for a warranty and then you get to collect their email address.
And it's not against TOS either.
It's not.
So yep. It's no. Really because you're offering an extra service to the customer. It's not like you're driving them to what's against TOS is to drive them to your site to specifically sell them something. But if you're just doing it for a warranty, it's good, you know?
Yeah. And another thing too, I posted about this today, but I won't talk about where I got it from, but my wife got invited to take a quiz in exchange for some Amazon gift cards. So not talking about the gift cards, but this, I went to it because I was interested in it and it was a women's clothing site. And it's like, hey, we want you to vote on this information. And there's like four or five steps in there, but I thought it was genius because first off, it was well thought out. It was a really nice funnel. And of course it's incentivized, but people love to take quizzes and tutorials, like, you know, like everybody does them on Facebook. Like, what kind of player are you? Or how do you dress? Or what kind of beersman are you? Whatever. But it was very specific information. And my point was that regardless of their incentivization is everybody that went through it, they got their email address and they got all types of, all types of really actionable information are for them, for this company, how or with what kind of product to launch in the future, like what maybe a different style of dress than they were thinking of. But they also have a warm audience to go after too. So inputting quizzes either through social media or advertising or email campaigns, it's a great way to engage with your audience and to get some really valuable information as well.
Yeah, it's a fantastic point. I'm a huge fan of, I don't know if you listen to them, Marcus, but I always talking about it as Neil Patel's marketing podcast. Mm-hmm. And they actually were just talking about this, how quizzes are like a really, really good way. I think they said that it boosted conversion or leads by like 20% or something. All you have to do is when you build those quizzes, make sure they're relevant to the people who are taking them, of course. And then, if possible, give them something of value at the end. Like, hey, take this beard quiz to know like what product's going to work best for you. And if you do that, you're going to get 50% off. Or, ooh, my chair just snapped out of, give them something of value at the end of the quiz so that, they're like even more so willing to go through those steps. And then you get their contact info and you can follow up with them. And then you know that they're also a beard man, because somebody who's not a beard man is not going to go through that trouble to do that.
I'm not a beard man.
yeah, exactly. But Amy, in your case, then it would be like, what do you do with your kitty litter? Do you do this? Do you do this? Do you do this? Do you do this? Well, what about if you did this? And guess what? You get 50% off. Thanks for filling out the survey or whatever, or not a survey, quiz. It's technically a survey, but you're getting people, you're gamifying it. So people are a lot more happy to do it.
Lori's asking, so first Philip asked, do you find it necessary to run maintenance launches on competitive keywords? For example, top 5 products for a keyword doing 100 sales per day, but you're doing 50 sales. Would you run an extra 20 units per day until the sales increase naturally through other keywords?
I mean, he kind of answered the question himself. If you're not converting on those keywords, then yeah. Like if you're at the top of page 1 for a keyword, then there's nowhere else you can go. So then you kind of move on. So if you're not happy with the placement or the sales that you're getting per day, then yeah, run a maintenance launch. Again, it's a business decision. Like how much is that 20 sales per day every single day? If it's beneficial to you, if you can see the ROI at the end of the funnel or the end of the tunnel, then yeah, do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you can do maintenance launches. And the other thing, which Amy knows that I love to do for my products and I tell people to do all the time is, I don't do a ton of maintenance launches, but what I do is just constant traffic. So from a source, one of my favorites is Google. You want to just keep sending, traffic and signals to Amazon that those keywords are relevant and that people are coming to your listing with using those keywords. So definitely something that you want to look at. Or you can do technically like a mini launch. It's like every week, just give 10 away at a discount and then drive traffic from another source as well. That also works. Try to be creative. Test. I know Marcus thinks that his testing is his scientist mentality is bad, but it's actually not. It's fantastic because that's how you really find kind of the gems and you find out what works. I mean, that's when I started Amazon, there was no courses, there was nothing to teach me. How I learned was just trial and error. And because of that, that's how I learned so much. And I watched Amy grow so much just by her doing trial and error. And she's one of those people too. Like, I feel like the most successful people on Amazon are those people who are doing the trial and error and putting in the time to do those trial and error tests, no matter what it's for, whether it's PPC, whether it's launches, whether it's listing optimization, whether it's your main photo, all those people that are turning dials are the ones who are successful.
Yes, agree. Well, dinner smells delicious, Andy.
All right, you can bow out. I'll try to get some of these other questions. Thanks a lot, Amy.
Good to meet you, Amy. Take care.
Yeah, it was nice to meet you. Thanks for joining us.
And tell your daughter, I don't know which daughter it was, but she did a good job on her chores in the background there.
Carrying the cat around?
No, it looks like she was like sweeping or mopping or something. I'm going to have to show this video to my son. You're 6 now. Get to work.
She's probably just eavesdropping, like, what are you talking about in there? I'm just going to sweep here in the background.
There we go. There we go. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Amy.
I'll see you later.
And Marcus, you can bow out whenever you want to as well. I'll keep going and building these questions. I know that you're kind of like me. You kind of enjoy this shop talk.
I do. Yeah, I was going to touch on Casey's follow-up question about inserts. He's, have you found offering free or hugely discounted hard good opt-in offers work best for product inserts versus using soft good? So hard good versus soft good is, for people who don't know, is maybe like an ebook would be a soft good and then the actual product would be a hard good. So I know of several people, some larger clients that are doing this and they're getting a lot of success out of it. You have to be careful about how you do it. It's all in the language and how you do things.
Yep.
People used to think that you couldn't send out more than two or three emails, or you can only send out one email and then you get banned by Amazon and stuff. It's the language and how you talk to people. I know people that are giving out free bottles of whatever. This works really well for supplements. They're giving out free bottles for every product that somebody purchased. Like it's literally on top of the bottle. Hey, go here, get your free bottle, next bottle free. So that's an easy sell. You have to be careful about that and why you're doing, like, of course you're doing it for a reason. But you have to be careful in the language and how you do that. Because if Amazon finds out that, like most people do that to get reviews, because throughout the language sequence, which I won't really get into, is like people, you get into a system where people by nature, like they feel, I think it's through like the process of reciprocity. Like, you gave me a free bottle. Now I have more of now I want to leave you a review, or people almost feel guilted into leaving. Yeah, I'll leave a review. They gave me a free bottle. That you're not supposed to do that. So that's where it's this kind of this gray area, but it works, but you have to be very, very careful in the language. You have to be very creative about it and how you talk to these people, because it can get you in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you want to play it safe, like I said, what you can do is you can offer like a warranty. And then when people register, you make them give you their email address, and you make sure that you say, like, we're going to send you your confirmation of your warranty to your email address. That way they can't give you a fake one. And then what you can do after that is, now that you have the email address, then you can go back and follow up with them. Amazon says you can't follow up with them to leave a review on Amazon, but there's nothing stopping you from emailing them directly. Or if you have, Marcus was talking about like a ManyChat flow, all those kinds of things. The only thing you have to be careful with is you can't combine that with, you can't combine that and say like, hey, we will give you a discount if you leave me a review. You can't combine those two. That's when you start getting into trouble.
I have a different opinion on how you talk to people outside of the Amazon ecosystem. For example, if I'm running Facebook ads for either lead generation or driving people to Amazon, in my opinion, I can talk to them in a different way than the way I talk to them through the Amazon emails, follow-up emails. Because in my opinion, that's my customer. I decided to send them to Amazon. I could have very well sent them to Walmart or Jet or wherever, or my site. So I personally, brand owner to brand owner, I talk a little bit more loosely outside of the Amazon ecosystem than how I talk to them in email sequences. I'm not recommending that, because you have to be very creative. Again, you have to be very creative in the way you talk to people. Because I still don't say, hey, if I give you a discount, will you leave me a review? I don't even say anything close to that. But there's people that'll disagree with me with that, and that's fine. It's okay. I'm not saying I'm right. It's just, you can be creative. You have to be very, very careful in how you talk to people. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you put a quiz offer link in your insert?
I don't see the point.
Yeah, I don't really either. So, and just to follow up really quick on what Marcus is saying. So the way that I look at it, and the way that I think Amazon is going to have a really hard time with, especially with product inserts, trying to kind of police, those things, is think about like the big brands. If you buy a big brand, like when you take out their, when you take the product out of the packaging, there's almost always some kind of promotional thing or, something from those big brands. So I think you would have a really good case with. If you got into trouble with those kinds of things with Amazon and even possibly with a lawyer, if you ever had to go that far by arguing and saying like, you're not targeting big brands, but you're targeting me. That would be something that you could, really make a strong, argument on. What I did personally, which, to me, everybody's really afraid to talk to Amazon. Amazon has started to realize that there's a lot of, especially now that Walmart's starting to grow and there's all these other people who are going to start nipping at Amazon's heels more and more every single year. And they know that. So they're finally starting to treat their sellers a little bit more with a little bit more value. But what I did was literally attach my product insert to a Seller Central ticket and said, "Hey, is this cool with you guys?" And they said, "Yeah, it's fine." And then I took note of the ticket number. So that way, if I ever get in trouble for that product insert, I've now got a record from Amazon saying buying off on that product insert. So that's something you can do. So even if you're like, you know, in other words, push the envelope and send them the insert. Because when I sent them, I was like, "Oh, I don't know if they're going to approve this." And they're like, "Yeah, it's fine." Push the envelope on the first try. If they say, "No, you can't," then edit it a little bit, send it again. Once you get one of those Seller Central people to be like, "Hey, yeah, that works." Then you have something to go with seller performance. If they nab you on something, you can say, "Hey, wait a minute. Here's this ticket.
Leverage."
Exactly. Here's this ticket with the actual insert attached saying, you know, "This is what we included. And you guys said it was cool. Like, you know, what are you talking about?" So, that's kind of how I did it.
No, you told me about that a while back. I think that's a great thing to do is just confirm. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody that you talk to in seller support is right 100% of the time, but it's like Andy said, it's leverage because you can go back and be like, "Hey, I was only doing what I was told I could do." You know, and then a lot of times I got into a little bit of trouble with reviews back in, right around Prime Day. But what I always try to do is like, give me action steps on what to do, because a lot of people in tier one seller support, they don't know how to answer that. They don't know what to tell you. So they'll either just ignore you. Well, they can't even ignore you. Like, they get measured on how quickly they close the ticket and ticket resolution and all those, you know. But I got into a situation where I ran a launch, a brand new product, and I got four reviews. Four reviews in 1 week. But they were all tied to a large discount, and they put me in the doghouse where nobody could leave any type of review, even if it was for a full price purchase. So I was like, "Hey, what's the deal?" Going back and forth. And I kept asking them. I was like, "Okay, I understand." Like, they wouldn't give me a clear answer. I was like, "I understand now that these were tied to a large discount because they weigh things. Amazon wants a natural buying experience." But I kept asking them, what's the next step I do here? And they kept saying, "There's nothing to do here." You know, one guy even said, "We're going to close this ticket." I created another one and I referenced the old one. I'm like, "Listen, I really need to understand what I need to do next. How do I, you know?" And finally they're like, "Hey, we resolved this, blah, 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 blah." They fixed it where people could leave a review again, which is all fine and dandy and everything. But my point is when you constantly ask them, what do I need to do? And put it in the frame of mind of what do I need to do to make the customer experience as best as possible? Because that's what Amazon wants. If they see that, if they get that language from a seller, instead of like, "Hey, asshole, turn my listing back on because you got suspended, you don't know what you're doing," like, that won't get you anywhere.
Yep. Honey works better than vinegar in every interaction with Seller Central. That's the case. And not only that, but because like you said, the tier one support people, that you're going to get a different answer. If I don't get the answer I like from one support specialist, I'll just keep reopening the ticket, and keep questioning them. Now, you know, don't be a dick. Like Barca said, you know, I always try to treat the Amazon employees like, "Thank you, sir." Like they, you know, always grateful and, you know, things like that, because there's no reason not to. You don't have to, you know, kiss their ass, but you know, you want to be cordial and treat them well, even if you feel like you're getting screwed, which a lot of times you are. Because you're going to get much better, much better results with treating them with respect and, you know, trying to get, get your way with, like I said, with honey rather than vinegar.
Yep. I'm going to help you answer this last one. Then I am going to bounce because dinner's right. Ready here too. So,
alrighty.
David Jones asked concerning a relaunch, if you had a product that did terrible for the first 6 months, 3.5 stars, 50 reviews, and you shut the ASIN down to make improvements. After improving the product, would you relaunch with a new UPC ASIN or relaunch with the old ASIN with the existing reviews? I would have to look at the listing to make a really calculated answer. But I mean, you got 50 reviews. You know, that's solid. They're 3.5 stars, but they're not 1.5 stars.
Right.
I don't know if I would create a brand new one. I might just try to relaunch it and have a strong review follow-up sequence in place, whether that's one email or five.
Yeah, that's a great point. I agree with Marcus. I mean, 50 reviews nowadays is really, really hard to come by. And that's reviews are a bigger signal to Amazon now since they started cracking down. What I would do, and we actually had this problem with one of our products, is we simply did a product insert that said, hey, if you have any problems, contact us first. Like I said, that was completely within terms of service. And what I did was, and I suggest lots of people do this, is you can't link outside of Amazon, but what we did is we put a QR code that links directly to our storefront contact page, which is completely within terms of service. So if they have an issue, they go to my Amazon storefront and email us through the Amazon storefront directly, which is completely within terms of service. And all of a sudden, you got a happy customer. Amazon loves that. When they saw my product insert, the email I got back was like, thank you so much for, like Marcus was saying, if you treat Amazon customers like gold, that's Amazon's main concern. If you're treating customers like gold, no matter what you're doing, they'll be happy about it. They wrote me this like glowing email back, like, thank you so much for thinking about taking care of the customer, blah, 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 blah. They loved it. So that's definitely something that I would do is change, maybe change the packaging a little bit to something more premium. That also could make a huge difference. Change the packaging and then put an insert front and center. So like when they open the box, it's the first thing that they see that says, hey, not happy, contact us, like right away. And I guarantee you, you'll be able to turn that 3.5 stars into, 4 or 4.5 soon enough.
All right, man, I'm going to run. I want to talk to you maybe later tonight about PPC if you got time or.
Yeah, well, so I'm in the office for another 2 hours. So just ping me on Facebook when you're back. Yeah, we can catch up afterwards and I can try to help you with that, all those
cool
stuff. And then, like I said, I want to talk to you about that trademark idea too.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man.
Yeah, thank you so much. I enjoyed this. I want to do it again.
Hey, Marcus, really quick before you go, like plug Six Leaf, like what any and like blogs, like social media, like any like that you want to.
Yeah,
you're not a big plugger, just like me. I almost hate to plug, but let people know.
Yeah. So you can find us at sixleaf.com. And he was talking about our blog. We try to focus on data driven information. Not saying other stuff isn't good or bad, but sixleaf.com/blog. You can, we have our private Facebook group that's really engaging. It's Brand Owners. If you just type in Brand Owners by Six Leaf, you can find it in Facebook. If you want to shoot me a message, you can shoot it to Marcus@sixleaf.com. And that's it. I could plug a ton of stuff. So. All right, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I want to do it again.
Hey, thanks again, Marcus. And one last thing is you have an open invitation. We do these every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific. So whenever you want to jump in, please do.
Cool. I want to talk about conspiracy theories one day.
Well, so yeah. So
Amazon-esque.
There we go. That's a good idea. So next week, I think we have, who do we have next week? It's, let me check the schedule here. Somebody good. I can't remember who it was though. Let me look. It is... Of course, my internet's being super slow. It is Fernando Cruz. Do you know Seller Tradecraft?
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So Fernando's going to be
jump in.
Yeah. So feel free. You're welcome. All right. Open invitation, man.
Cool.
All right. Take care.
Thank you so much. Thanks for everybody listening. Bye.
All right. Later. All right, everyone. Well, I'm going to jump off here in the next few minutes as well. I'm just going to take any last minute stuff. Once again, I'm going to unmute everyone because I like at the end if you want to jump in and say what's up, or actually you can unmute yourself if you want to say what's up or enable your video or anything like that, feel free. If not, I will jump off. Recording available. Yeah, there always is. We always do a replay. It usually takes us like a week or so to edit the video and then post it, but it'll be in my group, which is Amazon FBA Titans. It'll also be in Amy's group, which is Amazing at Home. So, hey, Trudy.
Hello.
Where are you from?
I'm in Fort Myers, Florida, where it's semi-warm.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm in California, so we're lucky. I'm at 65. You probably got me beat, though.
I have no idea what was in the 40s this morning.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, we might have you beat then. Cool. Well, thanks for jumping on.
What's 40s in Celsius? I have no idea.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Lori.
I think we might have everyone beat, but I don't know Fahrenheit very well. It's just hot and sticky.
That's good.
Well, what is that like,
Lori? Where are you? Are you in New Zealand or Australia? I'm guessing.
No, we're in Aruba.
Aruba. Oh,
remember?
That's right. I do remember. Yes.
That's right.
But you're from Canada originally, right?
Yeah, we're still from there. The mail still goes there. Businesses are headquartered there, etc. We just try to stay a little warmer for the winters, and till the money runs out, it's been working for a few years. So
there you go. Yeah, we're gonna. You know, I was born and raised in Hawaii, so my goal is my personal goal is by 2020 we're gonna have our vacation home in Hawaii. So.
Oh yeah, that's a gorgeous place. Which island?
I was raised on the Big Island, so Hawaii.
Yeah, perfect.
No, yeah. They're like, where are you from? I'm like, Hawaii. They're like, what island? I'm like, Hawaii. They're like, well, I'm confused.
No.
The biggest landmass, the one that when you look at the map of the Hawaiian Islands, it's the big one.
That's a good one. Either that one or Kauai, and I think you've got life pretty well made.
Yeah, the Big Islands and Kauai are, yeah, still a little bit more sleepy. The other islands are getting really, really crazy busy. So
Too crazy for us. I mean, we went and spent several months in Waikiki, and we're like, get us out of here.
Yeah, no, yeah, Oahu's definitely not my bag of tea.
No. Good to see once, you know, you've been there, okay.
Absolutely. Check. Sure.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
The Big Island's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Indeed.
All right, guys. Well, it was great talking to you. Anybody else want to jump in real quick, say what's up? And like I tell everyone,
hey, this is Chris Rampy calling in from Seattle. I just wanted to say, Andy, tagging on to what you'd said earlier about anything that you could do to improve the customer experience. The customer service associates love that. when I was working at Amazon a few years ago, we actually were required to take a customer service call day where we just sat in on customer calls all day long. And the emphasis of that entire experience was to show us how much care and how much expense really goes into each one of these contacts that they have with customers. So yes, I love the fact that, you know, you're pointing out making a customer experience better is something that they are always going to be behind. But more importantly, perhaps, what you have actually done by inserting that little, you know, contact us first is drive traffic away from their call center to your own first, you know, response, triage kind of a customer service center. And that is one of the number one cost drivers for every team at Amazon. And they are constantly aware of that metric. So anything you can do to drive the calls down, the customer service calls down, is a win for Amazon.
Hey, Chris, thanks so much for that input. I really appreciate that. That's awesome to get the insights, you know, directly from somebody who's been in the trenches at Amazon. And like I was saying, people get, and I'm super guilty of this myself, is get pissed off at seller support and things like that. And, you know, what people need to realize is it's a huge corporation. And, you know, a lot of times the seller support, you know, employees are just following, you know, procedures and systems that they have to follow. But they're still humans, and they're also still, you know, they're open to, you know, if you suggest something that's a good idea, they're all for it. You know, they're people too, and their end goal is not to, you know, make your life hell, which a lot of people think it is, but, you know, it's to work with you the best that they can within their parameters.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks again, Chris. That's awesome. And join us again, please.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for putting this together.
Yeah, my pleasure. All right. Anybody else? All right, guys. Well, as you all know, this is we do this every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, which if you don't know what that is, it's just think of Amazon time or Google time. We're the same. That's the easiest way to remember. I always see, like, I get email notifications when people jump into this meeting, and it's always like I get them all times of night, like days and things like that. So I know people are looking at their local time. Just remember when you jump in here that it's Pacific time. So make sure you got 1 p.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays. To catch this live. We also do we repost it on all the different social channels. And the other cool thing that we do after the fact is we cut the segments down to like question answer, and then each of like the points and things like that. So it's very digestible after the fact. Once we get this seller roundtable website set up, we'll have it all posted. So you'll literally be able to go click into the episode and then click into like a sub part of the episode to see like a specific clip, which I think you guys will really enjoy, because then you can really drill down if there's something you missed one time, or a question that you're trying to get answered. That'll be really helpful. So let's see. Let's make sure I got everybody else. Lori, Six Leaf, it's actually spelled out like SIXleaf.com. It's a launch service similar to my launch service, which is AMZ Blitz. There's Viral Launch. If you search, you know, Amazon Launch Service, you'll find a ton of them. Like I said, Six Leaf, even though they're technically a competitor, if I wasn't using my service, I'd use theirs. They do a really, really good job over there. Especially with like drilling down, you know, data points wise and kind of being, you know, customer focused and giving out really great data for free. That's definitely who I would pick. Pritesh, recording, yes. Like I said, it's in the FBA Titans group or in Amy's group, which is Amazing at Home. Insert email us if you have problems. That is a QR code. So like if you go to your Amazon here, I'll show you real quick. Let me share my screen here. So if you go to, everybody see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. So if you go into the storefront, so what you would do is you would provide, okay. So if you go here, you see there's a ask a question button right here. What I do is you take this URL, you copy it, and then you go to a free, you can just type into Google free QR code generator and you paste this in and it'll literally create a QR code from this URL. So if somebody scans that with their phone, it takes them directly to this page, which they'll see your brand here and then they'll see this little button that says ask a question. You can also provide your phone number too if you want to talk to them directly. I don't, so I don't include the phone number. You can use this ask a question button and then they'll click that, and it'll open an email directly to you. So you're catching them before they get mad at you.
It also shows them how good you've done.
Right. Yeah. It also shows you're not only that, but, you're sort of marketing them indirectly as well, because if they say, for example, they liked your experience, like a lot of times, you don't always get gripes. You'll get people who follow up and say, hey, you know, I bought this product in the past. Do you have something similar for this? Or I want to reorder it, or I want to send, you know, to my sister, or, you know, whatever. Do you have a product recommendation? So you can see down here, there's the products tab here, which will take people to all your products. So it's sort of like a little bit of a marketing, thing as well. But, you know, like I was saying, Amazon loves it.
I love it. I've had one person come back and buy the same item 3 times.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens.
I've only sold 36 of the items.
Yeah.
Well, she's bought quite a bit of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a good way to do it. All right, let me make sure that stop my screen share so I can see any more questions. All right, looks like it, guys. I'm going to get going. Like I said, I always use my bladder as my guide, and I've been drinking my iced tea as usual during this session. So it is time. Thank you guys so much again. And if you want to reach out to me, the FBA Titans group, I always try to stay in there and answer. If not, I'm usually pretty available on Facebook. You can just message me directly. If you can't get me there, last but not least, on the sellerseo.com website, there's like a live chat option. You can drop your questions or, you know, anything you need in there as well. And I'm happy to help you. So that's it. If you guys want one-on-one coaching, I do offer that. We offer a free 15-minute consultation. Like if you just want to, you know, if you just want me to look over your listing and like give you some tips, things like that, we can do that. We also have paid coaching if you want longer sessions. We do that as well. If you're a sellerseo.com member, you get free 30 minutes coaching. So have a great day, and we will talk to you guys again soon. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for live Q&A and bonus content after the recording at sellerroundtable.com. Sponsored by the ultimate software tool for Amazon sales and growth, sellerseo.com and amazingathome.com.